Meow.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios, where we alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep the sin flow the same. Sadism out of your head. Can you feel it, Diana? Are you back? Can you feel it, Dobby? Are you still there?
I sure can.
I'm still here.
All right.
Worms.
Back. And this thing is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. You can learn more at BIPCOT.org. And so we're going to have an interesting show today. We're going to be talking all Molyneux all the time. And which is interesting.
It's the whole show. It's not just like a segment. We're going to do the whole show on Molyneux.
Nah, we'll try.
Okay.
Should we give the lowdown on who this is for anyone who might still not know?
I'm sure there's lots of people that don't know.
I'll let you do it since you're the one that made a video recently about this.
I know, and I spent like a good 20 hours listening to him. It was just horrendous. So, I only know aspects of him. I'm sure he kind of does this thing where he's the expert on everything, so it almost feels unfair to summarize him as saying he's an anarchist who has a YouTube show. He's also promoting this thing called peaceful parenting, I think it's called. He's an expert parent who's got the ideas that will change the future generations into peaceful utopia dwelling beings. He says that nobody's going to come around like him for another 2,000 years if he doesn't succeed, that he's combined all of these ideas and understandings about the world with the no spanking, right? That's his big parenting thing, is no spanking, as if there was never a Dr. Spock.
I've never heard of anybody ever making that claim, you shouldn't spank your kids. Never, never, ever.
I know. How in the world did Molyneux think of this?
It's brilliant.
So he's got this YouTube channel that he runs. He's got this thing called Free Domain Radio. And essentially.
And that's how it goes. So I get that he gets, his claim to fame is... Well, is she back?
Welcome back.
Do I keep disappearing?
No. Yeah, yep. You just disappeared. You left off somewhere around eventually.
that's my beef with him is that he's called a cult leader by a number of people, specifically people who used to be in Free Domain Radio and left. And those are the people who really kind of know what they're talking about. It's not just outsiders saying, you look kind of culty to me. Right? It's kind of a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was assessing, the types of behaviors you'll find when you engage with Molyneux or if you engage with people who follow Molyneux and what that says about his level of cultiness. Yeah. Now, you've got some history with him, Jim Jesus. Is it Jim Jesus or Jim Jesus?
It's Jim Jesus. No relation.
My
thing went back a couple of years ago. I started noticing things that he was saying that was really kind of disturbing, that I was even defending him on for a while. And then I started noticing, like, okay, I can't really defend this anymore because I'm noticing things that are just indefensible. And I didn't really start making videos about him until really after about the DMCA gate, where he filed a bunch of bogus DMCA claims to silence a critic and a doxer. They're not the same person. And I started making videos about that. But before then, I was just kind of critical about some of the things he said, and I would make videos about two other people about other people, but talk about things that he said. And then after the DMCA thing, I really kind of blew the whistle on that, because a lot of the whole ANCAP community had no idea what was going on at all, because they didn't follow people like True Sheebs. That was really kind of like the critics of Molyneux who weren't ANCAPs, that were mostly.
Now that's a big deal, right? Because he said specifically that he didn't believe in intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for people who didn't really know anything about this or maybe don't know what a DMCA is, he says that he doesn't believe in intellectual property, but then to silence his critics, he used intellectual property law to have their channels taken down. That's a huge deal.
Yeah, and to top it off, he also really advocates people using the handshake over, what was it, the handshake over the gun. And he was actually using the gun over the handshake because YouTube had a policy to get rid of people who are doxing. That's completely private. It's just a completely internal system where you can report them to YouTube. And YouTube's very liberal about what videos they take down under privacy complaint. I had just had a video taken down of mine that said it was... that it was some sort of privacy complaint or a harassment or whatever. And they ended up reversing it because it was basically saying this person wasn't being harassed, but they false flagged it down and I was able to get it back up. But they're very, very liberal about how wide they spread that policy. But yeah, so that's kind of
how he responds to critics is not just important on that level, but that's one of the things he promotes himself as the biggest philosophy show on the internet. And his credentials are that he got an A on a paper for his master's, right? Which apparently he bullied the prof into giving him an A on it. But he doesn't actually have any credentials as a philosopher. Fine. You can still philosophize, right?
Well, to be fair, neither do I. I mean, so what? I took like two philosophy courses when I got my art degree.
Right. But he submitted his book. He sent copies of his book to people who actually are philosophers by profession. And when he got the criticisms back, he just went, that's not an argument. And he actually failed to deal with it. And these people, one of them that I read, he was a postgraduate philosophy student. And he took the time to go through universally preferable behavior, UPB, it's Stefan's big claim to fame, went through it and broke it down and actually tried to help him form proper arguments to see where it would lead, right? The guy did a lot of work and got no proper response. I think for a philosopher, the proper response to criticism would be to debate with them about the actual points of logic or to reassess it, to go back and rework the book and try to make it better, yeah? Sure. And he didn't do any of those things. Just sent all of his molly bots after the guys.
Yeah, I noticed when this, I think this is the same person, but he went on there and he was debating Molyneux, and Molyneux was trying to give kind of like emotional arguments, like, you know, do you, how you make me feel or whatever when you make these arguments. And he said basically, well, I don't really care how you feel because we're just talking about the ideas. And he basically blocked him from the forum after that and said, like, you know, if you don't care about me, then you don't care about my ideas, you don't care about truth, you don't care about, you know, whatever. And then just that was his argument. That's not an argument either, but but yeah, that was his argument. And this is supposed to be like the world's greatest philosopher or whatever, you know. He's a salvation of philosophy, I think that's his own terms.
Yeah.
Well, this not an argument, that's you know, the go-to response for any criticism of him, whether you've made an argument or not, right? But I covered a video that he did fairly recently where a guy in his comment section said, well, I don't like statistics because they can be used to say whatever you want. And essentially the guy is saying correlation does not equal causation, right? Mm-hmm. And that is an actual argument. But Stefan decided to take this one comment and do this big rant. It was like about 3 minutes long, telling the guy how stupid he is and how it's so embarrassing. And he doesn't realize that everybody can see how stupid he is, and just kept repeating that like insult to the guy's intelligence, but then accused him of just getting emotional. And that's why this guy said this thing about statistics, because the guy was being emotional.
And what's the accused correlation causation problem?
Well, just because two things might be correlated, it doesn't mean that one caused the other.
No, yeah, I know connected. That. I just right. mean
oh,
like.
Oh, okay, I thought that was.
I mean, like, what is it? I guess it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what he was correlating.
Well, they were talking about spanking studies, right?
Yeah.
And
I don't know.
So
there's like
spanking causes.
I don't know if you've ever. It's actually incredibly difficult to prove causation. So, like, if you want to claim anything about causation, I'm not even really sure how you do it definitively. There's essentially just, like, people have come up with some sort of a standard, which is the number of double-blind whatevers.
Mm-hmm. I actually saw another criticism that was much like that of a really great channel, actually, this guy, Corey Anton.
He's a He is.
Do you know who Corey Anton is? I don't know who Corey Anton is.
No clue. It's kind of that's a really bad cliff. Leave me on. It's like, yeah, right. Well, I can't finish your sentence on that one. Sorry.
Yeah. So I was never more than a donor to Molyneux. I was I had like a, I don't know, a monthly subscription, whatever it was, mm-hmm. To his stuff, which I guess got you on the board, and I read a bunch of his books
Fiend
and stuff.
Phone.
But I was never
Fiend phone.
I was never part of an inner circle or anything like that.
Yeah. I was never even I don't think I've ever donated. And he may come out and say I donated somewhere, but he's not going to acknowledge me. But I don't ever. No, I did. I'm sorry. He was making a big fluff about someone donated $2, and so we started this camp.
Are you the guy?
No. Someone else did, and he was making a big stink about it. And so like we got a few of us to get together and all chipped in 2 cents. We all donated 2 cents to his thing. And then the next day he made this long podcast about how, you know, we're all just child abused, you know, rejects, you know, who are clearly showing the bomb in the brain. Sorry to interrupt, but yeah. So we were just like, okay, whatever. But wait, what? Yeah,
because you.
We started
a donation whining. You must have been abused.
Because we were all donating 2 cents after he was complaining that someone donated $2 and say that wasn't enough. You know, you don't care about freedom or philosophy or anything like this or virtue or truth or ethics. That's why you only gave me $2. You don't care. Just get out of the way. And so we all got this little campaign together to donate 2 cents to him. And I guess it was upsetting enough for him to make a whole podcast about it. But but yeah, that was it. I was never really a donor. I was just a subscriber to the YouTube channel. I thought it was very interesting. But then there was stuff about the Colin shows and the psychology and all the stuff, and I was just like not interested in any of that. I was only interested in the libertarian stuff and just skipped over it. So I never really noticed any of that stuff. But yeah, I never read any of his books. I flipped through UPB and I was just like, this is just weird. I'm just gonna bow out because I didn't really know much about philosophy. Everything I've learned about philosophy has happened after I left Stefan Molyneux's YouTube channel. So,
So I was really interested in the psychology stuff and the peaceful parenting stuff and the relationship stuff. I read Real Time Relationships. I read UPB. But I don't know. I guess I wasn't turned off by it. I kind of like
Fiend phone.
Mostly was turned off by the man and his attitudes.
Yeah. We'll be back.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
New Hampshire is under quarantine as walking corpses devour the flesh of the living. Max is 11 years old and surviving alone. Slow-moving and non-thinking, the dead swarm his home. Now he must apply his Porcupine Freedom Scouts training to improvise his escape. Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, or read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com.
I just have to say, we didn't do. I don't think we did it for the last 2 days. But Obama's a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink.
It's true.
Yeah. So, anyways, we have Diana back. Knock on wood. So you were talking about this person, and we didn't really catch that part. Perhaps you can enlighten us. And then she's gone. Oh boy.
Which person? What are we?
Oh, you're here.
Who now?
Yeah, she was talking
about
this
philosopher. There's this philosopher guy. Oh, he was challenging the statistics, use of statistics, and the video about your enslavement, right? So, and that's one of the reasons to object to statistics. I mean, they're kind of useful for discussion, but you have to understand how the statistics are derived and what they mean. But what he really does is he just throws a bunch of stats at you and then tells you what the conclusion has to be. And if you disagree with them, that's not an argument, right? And that's the problem with this not an argument that you hear all the time is like the discussion didn't even start. And then the not an argument assumes that they've already made their point and that they're coming from a solid position. And it's up to you to challenge them. Even when you make a statement or assertion, and then it's their job to argue with you, they'll just discount what you said by saying it's not an argument. And it's like, well, it wasn't intended on being one. It's a statement, right? It's a thesis, shall we call it. Right? In my particular case, a thesis that he is potentially running a cult. Well, that's not an argument.
It's a hypothesis.
Yeah.
It actually is. But, you know, I went back and listened to some of his early shows, and I...
And she...
And, you know...
Yeah, and...
I'm sure things happened in his early shows.
And I have a theory. It's a podcast from his car.
Okay.
And...
yeah, he used to podcast from his car.
Yeah, and he didn't realize, and he even says this, he didn't realize that anyone was going to listen to him. And he's so stunned... to the point of tears when he gets an audience, and really deeply affected by it. And just like anyone will experience this when you go on the internet and you've never really used.
this is bad.
I think maybe this is not going to work.
Yeah.
So he used to, for those that don't know, he
at the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. We missed all of that.
Yeah. All of it.
So what? I don't know if you want to break it up into seasons or whatever, but like the first like few hundred episodes, and yes, that is 100 episodes of this show.
I think he's on like 3,500 or something right now.
Okay, well, like it was like around 300 or 400 that he transitioned to a studio. He used to record in his car, and it was sort of neat. It was like he would be commuting to work, and sometimes he'd be talking about work, and it was like it was the most sort of. I don't know. It was like this weird like pro-am recording studio in his car. I just thought it was sort of neat at the time.
He's always had great audio. That's one thing I will give him. He's always had had a knack for having good audio. Wish I could say the same, but thanks, Michael.
Hey, I wish I could say the same.
We sound good now. Yeah, and there was a time where I think one of the episodes he almost got in a car accident. But he was even saying like on his first interview with Free Talk Live, that he thought that people were only watching him because they thought that he was going to crash and they were just waiting for the episode where he crashed his car. But he would drive, you know, with one hand holding a microphone and of course. But yeah, but you know, he would drive around with a, you know, a microphone in his hand and just start rambling on, and you'd see him leaving.
I don't think he had a microphone in the car. I think he had a headset.
No, I think he may have, but I remember there was a few, the ones that I've seen where he was actually holding on to a handheld microphone.
In the car?
In the car.
I mean, imagine like endangering, you know, 2,000 years of liberty on a handheld device. Just get a hands-free mic.
Yeah, I think he ended up doing that, but originally he wasn't doing that. But anyway,
I'm pretty certain that he did, because I'm pretty certain that his original headset ended up in the custody of Brett Vinat from the School Sucks podcast.
Mm. Yep.
Fiend phone.
Well, now he's so full of himself, he actually thinks he can run for president.
That was so weird. Go ahead, explain that.
Well, he did
Maloney
a video
running for president.
He did a video responding to. He said, "I'm getting tons of comments saying, why don't you run for president with Trump?" And he's like, "Yeah,
he's
I
Canadian?
Could do that, except for that it would just hurt my soul."
But he did.
But not because he's an anarchist.
Or a Canadian. I think it's free market time. We'll be back.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Meow. Meow. relevant? Like, why is this relevant to, like, the guy who's just tuning in on his way to the hardware store right now? like what makes this, you know, accessible to the everyman?
You're talking about the Molyneux thing, correct? I hope.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess the real reason why it's relevant is because Molyneux is probably one of the most prominent figures in the libertarian anarcho-capitalist tradition, and he gets a lot of press coverage, like from Time. I think it was Time magazine that picked up a story about him. The Guardians talked about him. There was a recent episode of some show on one of the British broadcasting stations or whatever. So he gets a lot of press, and we just wanted to make sure that everybody was, like, aware that this is not something, you know, that we support. You know, like, we kind of agree with him politically for the most part, but, you know, like, we don't really necessarily hold him up to be the be-all, end-all of what we think. So, yeah. Sure. So we just, yeah. So it's important to get that kind of, like, you know, so that way when, you know, someone's talking about this, like, oh, I heard about some cult leader who's promoting this, they can say, well, you know, like, I heard on the radio that, you know, they're not fully in agreement with this guy. So, you know, he's just one off or whatever. So,
Yep.
So what's been going on with you? Since we don't have Diana with us, she's trying to fix her internets.
Well, I'm getting ready for Walker Stalker Con. You know what that is?
No. What is that? Actually, I do, but so I want you to
explain. I guess it's sort of a general sort of zombie horror convention now, but it was originally like a Walking Dead specific convention, and there is now a Walker Stalker Con somewhere in the country every month of the year, and maybe more. But next month is the one in Atlanta, which is the big one, and that's because Walking Dead is filmed or was filmed in Atlanta. It might still be. I don't know. It's set in Atlanta anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going, which is exciting. I have my second Survivor Max book coming out. I write zombie novels.
Oh, nice.
And so it should be out in time for the convention at the end of October.
All right. And you got that new BIPCOT flag that you're going to be waving too.
Yeah, I'm going to put that on my table, the BIPCOT no government flag.
Mm-hmm. Your book's covered by the BIPCOT no government license, right?
Mm-mm.
No.
No, there was a sort of legal disagreement with the publisher about what sort of copyright we were going to run. And this is the folly of going with an outside publisher. Essentially, like, this publisher is convinced if you don't copyright something, you won't make any money on it, which is kind of fallacious, I think. But the interesting thing is that the contract specifies that I have to be a party to any lawsuit regarding the copyright. And since that will never happen, like, it's essentially meaningless.
Oh well.
But no, Survivor Max, I had a contract and a three-book deal before the BIPCOT license existed, so in the future though, once Survivor Max is done, I'm going to be doing something called Incoherence of the Dead, which is it's about a zombie outbreak during the pilgrimage in Mecca. And that one's probably going to be self-published, and I'll probably end up using something like the BIPCOT.
Let's see. So I think we have Diana back, do we?
Oh, yeah, I'm back for now. We'll see how it works out this time.
Okay.
I'm rebooted. I'm feeling good.
Yeah.
We're talking about zombies?
Yeah, we're talking about zombies.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of...
We're already talking about zombies.
Zombie story.
Yeah. Well, that's what I think Molyneux fans are. A bunch of zombies. They really just have certain lines they mimic over and over again, like zombies walking around going... That's not an argument.
It's not
universally argument. Preferable behavior. Non-aggression principle.
Yeah.
You actually think the bomb in the brain is kind of more of a analogy for zombies in a way. Because, like, if you listen to... So one of the things that I do is I'm in this group called the Zombie Research Society, which is actually pretty huge. And it's professors that use zombies to teach their college courses. As a metaphor, but you get into neurobiologists that talk about it, and it's all about the amygdala and the hippocampus, which is anger and satiation, right? So you take the fight or flight mechanism and you turn off flight, so they're in fight mode all the time, and then you take the hippocampus, which is the difference between hunger and satiation, and you turn off satiation, so they're hungry and angry all the time.
Now, originally, weren't zombies vampires, like, in the original...
Yeah, in I Am Legend.
Yeah, so wouldn't, like, garlic be a flight response? a reaction to lacrosse or garlic.
It's interesting, right? So, like, zombies existed before I Am Legend and before Night of the Living Dead. Like, there was, like, White Zombie and Revolt of the Zombies, and, like, there were a lot of zombie movies out way before these books and movies, but at the time, they were all solitary monsters. They were, like, it was a slavery thing. Like, you'd have a voodoo master who could, like, enslave or raise a corpse and use it as a slave. And so you had, like, it was the damsel in distress and the monster who was trying to kill her. And so it was more like Frankenstein in a way. Mm-hmm. And then Richard Matheson writes I Am Legend, and he doesn't use the zombie. Like, the zombie exists as in sort of voodoo folklore at the time, but he uses the vampire. And then George Romero takes I Am Legend and says, I'm going to make a low-budget movie out of that concept. And he does it, only they're not vampires anymore. But he doesn't use the word zombie either. He calls them ghouls. And so there's this, like, long tradition of not using the word zombie in zombie fiction.
I've noticed that. They call it, what, walkers and Walking Dead?
Walkers and skin bags and creepers and lame brains and ghouls. And, yeah, they just come up with anything other than zombies to call them. Yeah. And then you get the opposite, where you have, like, Zombieland or any of the zombie movies that are sort of willing to poke fun at themselves. They'll use the word zombie and they sort of make it sort of kitschy and funny. And
yeah, the Zombieland's probably, like, my favorite zombie show or thing that I've read. I love that movie. I'm not really a big fan of the running zombies. I like the slow moving zombies, you know, the ones you can actually get away from.
Yeah.
But that one was good. That one was good.
I allow for both. I'm really happy that the genre is mutating, right? So you get, like, what the heck was it called? Warm Bodies was, like, a romantic comedy with zombies, which is, you know, it's not, that doesn't work. No amount of glitter is going to make zombies a heartthrob. But at the very least, like, it broke the genre into this idea that zombies could be rehumanized. And there's a lot of stuff in that department that I think is really cool. Like, iZombie does that. It's sort of like a whodunit murder mystery thing where the zombie eats brains and then has visions of the person's death and uses the visions to solve the murder. And then,
so we're never going to get a real good zombie Twilight. Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't think
matter how hard we try, no more glittering.
I don't think that's ever going to happen. But there's a British show. I can't remember the name. It's, like, called Flesh or something like that. And Bean it's, like, there's a zombie outbreak, right? And everybody goes crazy for, like, 6 months. And then they develop this serum that they can inject the zombies with. And then they become human again. Hmm. And as long as they get their fix of this serum, they stay kind of vaguely human other than having to deal with their decaying corpses, right? But then you have, like, the plot of this show is, like, one, the zombies dealing with the remorse of the memory of having eaten their neighbors and things. And then two, it's a whole, like, segregation, kind of, like, racism allegory where, like, the living all have this sort of, like, prejudice against the dead. And it's about managing essentially a refugee crisis in a way. Like, there's hundreds of these zombies that are, you know, need to be reintegrated into society. And then they sort of build a kind of cult. Like, there's a zombie messiah in the show who's like, no, it's we're better cult. Now. We're an improved man. We're not sick. We're chosen or something like that.
I don't think so.
What do you think the psychological... What's the psychological allure of the zombie story, though? Like, just all of our ancestors getting up and rising from the dead? Is it an illness kind of thing? Like an Ebola
fear? No, it's not. It's not about ancestors. It's about neighbors. It's really fundamentally what makes the zombie different from any other monster is that he outnumbers the survivor, right? Like, so he takes the majoritarian ethic and makes it the worst thing possible, right?
Trump.
Yeah, like, seriously, though, like, you'll see every candidate has a zombie comic, somebody making fun of their followers or their candidate with zombie stuff.
Hillary.
Ready for brains.
Hope.
That's my theory anyway. And even in I Am Legend, the very first description of the monster in I Am Legend, Richard Matheson writes, Of course, they turned to violence. They've been denied the voting franchise. So, see, if zombies were just allowed to vote, and they could vote themselves more brains, then we wouldn't have riots in the street. We wouldn't have this, like, war-torn, apocalyptic world anymore. They would just, you know, they would have their own sort of, like, you know, brain lobe welfare program.
So you're saying that democracy is two zombies and a human voting on once for dinner?
Yeah, I actually made that poster when the first season of Walking Dead came out. I made a poster of Rick on his horse being pulled down by all the zombies in Atlanta, and it said, "Democracy is 10 zombies and a sheriff deciding on dinner."
I hadn't seen that, so that's... Oh, well. Great minds, right?
But that's my theory. Yeah, I think there's a large sort of like latent fear that people have that that democracy is sort of cannibalistic and it isn't working and it's unsustainable and it's gonna, and this is why zombie movies are always the complete collapse scenario, right? Mm. Like what if all of the systems of sustenance disappear overnight and you have to survive on your wits, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think too. Just people feel like they're a number in this big mass of something that their voices don't count, and it's kind of like being lost in a.
It is like being lost.
Yeah, it is. It is being lost.
So proud like of zombies, yeah. Who we're all just two.
Yeah, there's a game that I don't play. I don't play this game called Minecraft, and they have like little zombies. But there's actually a scenario in it where you can actually like cure certain types of zombies and then make them into like the little villager characters so that you can trade with them. And there's like a little economy inside of it too. So I don't know. That just kind of reminded me of something you said where they're trying to cure the zombies. It'd be interesting to try to make it seem like the zombies, the bad guys, are actually like the healed persons. Yeah. Oh, well.
Well, they are immortal, so they are better off in that sense. Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
So, this is the Freedom Fiends, and we were talking about robot jocks during the break. Did you say that you found a trailer for it?
Yeah, I found a trailer for it on YouTube. And I was watching it. It's innerdasting, to say the least. I have not seen this, by the way.
Innerdasting? What is that?
Innerdasting. It's like interesting, but even more innerdasting.
Okay. So it's from the 90s, and it's, I guess it's stop motion special effects with these like giant robots. The premise is that like, all war has sort of evolved into this like gladiator tournament style battle between giant robots, and there are really only two superpowers left in the world, and it's the Market and the Confederation. Or maybe it's the Federation. I don't know. It's essentially capitalism versus communism, because I guess it was written at a time when that was the scare.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I watched it again recently. I grew up. I watched it in theaters when it came out as a kid, and I think it still holds up as a film. There's also there's two sequels, which are not quite sequels. One is called Crash and Burn, and the other is called Robot Wars. And what's interesting is they definitely don't follow the story or the plot, and they're only vaguely in the same universe in the sense that there are giant robots around. But they were not marketed in the U.S. as sequels to Robot Jocks. They were marketed in the U.K. and Australia as sequels to Robot Jocks. And both of them were marketed as Robot Jocks 2. So it's really unclear what the timeline is in this universe of theirs.
That's bizarre.
But
from what I can tell from what I can tell from the trailer, it seems like it's almost like Pacific Rim kind of meets Power Rangers, like the part where they turn into the giant robot. I don't know what it's called. I don't watch that show, or I didn't watch that show.
Zorts? I think they're called Zorts in Power Rangers. Zorgs? I don't know. Whatever.
Something that sounds probably right. I don't know. But it kind of looks like a combination.
Pacific Rim is very much, because it's like a person sort of in a cockpit inside a giant robot fighting. Although there's no, what were the emoji? Not emojis, kaijus. They're called kaijus in Pacific Rim, the weird interdimensional alien things.
Mm-hmm.
You know what bugs me? This bugged me about Pacific Rim, and it bugs me about everything. Independence Day, Starship Troopers, all of them. Aliens are always these like weird hive-minded things that are like they're totally impossible to defeat until you find the mothership, and then for some reason like the network effect doesn't apply and everything gets shut down from the center. Like,
and it's usually always nuclear weapons.
It was Avengers did it too. We're like, you fly, Iron Man flies a bomb through the portal thing, and then suddenly all of the aliens shut down. Like, that would never happen. They would still be around, like, trying to, you know, fend for themselves, even if they lost the command structure. I don't know.
Yeah, it was kind of weird that they always have that same kind of plot. And it's always like a nuclear bomb. It's always some sort of nuclear or hydrogen bomb or something like that. You would think that they would be like, okay, these people have these weapons called nuclear weapons. Perhaps maybe we should design a ship that's, that can deflect such a thing. I mean, we can fly through space. Why not protect ourselves from an atom bomb? Seems like something they would figure out really
Fiend
easily.
Phone.
Oh, yeah, do a little reconnaissance.
This is Furries or the Fiend Phone Unnecessary Mothership Connection Exigency Reeducation Interruption Emergency System. What's up, y'all?
What's going on? We're all talking about zombies and robots.
Wasn't there supposed to be some chick on here with us tonight?
Yeah, but she had some internet connection problems, so you told her. Kick rocks. Actually, she was eaten by the Molyneux zombies, and they were like, sorry to interrupt, but we're gonna turn your internet off. It's clearly bomb of the brain material.
Alright. Worms.
Yeah.
Worms.
But we'll be back. Will you be back?
I'll be back. I will be here for the duration.
Worms.
Get up for a nap. I'll have some coffee. And then I'll talk into my coffee cup, but it won't work as well as when Jim does it. Is that working?
You think vein posting is your ally?
Wait, you're supposed to do it with coffee in the cup all the way to the top, right?
That's a bad idea.
It doesn't work. That's my vein imitation. He's getting electrocuted.
Hey, there's some Squiscar Squig Elves from Death Clocks. And UM's listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, the radios. And I guess I says worms now. So there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons. And you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Pipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1 1/4 inch. Now they're 1 3/4 inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean?
Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's local orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Yeah. Yeah, this is Diana Davison. It's been 8 minutes and I have not been raped.
You're doing it wrong.
How do I do it?
Dan, are you okay? You sound like maybe you have a sore throat or something.
You sound like you have a sore throat and it's dropped an octave, you know. What is it, Jim? Do it, Jim.
Have you been replaced by a pod person?
Yes. A pod feminist.
Do what?
No, Jim, how do you do it?
Do what?
Jim. I don't know. Diana not being raped.
Oh,
I'm not being raped right now.
Is that good?
Yes. Yes. That was very good.
Of course. It was extremely painful.
That's going too far. I'm sorry.
Barack Obama is a liar. He's a socialist. And his feet stink.
Yeah. We didn't say that for the last two shows, didn't we?
We didn't say that for the last 12 shows.
Jeez. We're gonna
have to come up with something else to say once he's out of office.
I'm sure whoever takes his place will be a liar, a socialist with, well, maybe not stinky feet, but stinky something. Yeah. So, Davi, tell us about the zombies.
They're taking over. They're taking our jobs. That's what they're doing.
Well, foreigners are coming from China because we, you know, because we got Hugo and we got Dan and we got Mrs. Dan over there. We got people taking our jobs. If you consider our jobs being doing late night talk radio that doesn't pay anything, the foreigners are taking our jobs.
It's kind of a job.
And Diana Davison's from Canada, eh?
Yeah. That's so racist to me. Like, I don't even consider that foreign. I'm like, yeah, Vancouver, that's like, it's a suburb of Seattle, right?
Yeah, it's not even a real country anyway.
When there was some point where Bill Gates was upset with whatever the government was doing to him that week, and he threatened to move to Vancouver. Like, just, I'll just take my factory and, yeah, like move to Vancouver and, you know, people can just commute 30 miles to go work at Redmond North. It worked, apparently. But now he's like, I don't know, it seems like all of the pontiffs of everything have been turned. Like, doesn't it seem like Bill Gates and the Pope are all in bed with, like, the one world order and you know, rich people that want to tell everyone, you should want to pay your taxes. It's good. What's
yeah.
with that? What's,
I don't know
what's,
what the pontiffs you know, of what's, everything means. What does that mean?
The people that run the world, you know, like the Pope, Bill Gates, Barack Obama.
I wanted to do an impression when you said the people that control the world, but I don't think I'm allowed to. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm not allowed to, I don't think, per your contract. So we're just going to
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yeah, we need not my contract with you, my contract with the people that run my world.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What
so
now?
I'm just not going to do that.
I missed something.
Don't worry about it.
I have the documents.
Yeah. I...
You got it. Not worrying about it.
Yeah.
The pontiffs of everything.
Those juice boxes.
That sounds conspiratorial.
Those juice boxes that are making everyone gay. Anyway.
What?
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It's a show. It's a great show. Don't get me wrong. I like it. It's a great show.
Michael Dean takes my calls. Yeah.
He won't take my calls. He'll take Michael Dean's calls. He's a great guy. I don't know him personally, but you know, just not my thing. It's not my thing.
This sounds like a Trumpism going on.
It is.
I love the Chinese people. Believe me, the Chinese people, they're loved by me, and you can believe me. You can trust me. That's what he does. He doesn't actually answer questions. He just sort of like repeats them over and over. Yeah.
And then he'll say something absolutely crazy and then immediately follow it up with something to try to make it sound less crazy. Like, I mean, Chinese people, I mean, they're not the greatest thing in the world. I like Chinese people. They're good people. I just sold an apartment to a Chinese person. Great. Fabulous view. You can see World Trade Center. Beautiful. Fantastic. Like that. What does it have to do with my question?
What has a fantastic view of the World Trade Center now? A time machine?
No, they built a new one. I don't know if you heard.
You know, there's actually a World Trade Center that was bombed in the 70s. Do you guys know about this? There's a World Trade Center in San Francisco. It's in Embarcadero and Market. Yeah, it's the clock tower.
Hmm.
Yeah, there's a bunch of World Trade Centers. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And it was like ahead of the office for like local military recruiting in the early 70s. And someone put a bomb in it. No people got hurt, but it was the guy. What's the guy that wrote Obama's book?
Bill Ayers.
Yeah, it was his crew.
Yeah, isn't that the Seattle 7? No, that I think that was someone else. No,
they're from New York, but so they had people out, and I think they were on the Lam out in L.A. No, L.A. and San Francisco.
I remember a group called like the Seattle 7. Something like that.
Fiends.
My favorite Trumpism is when he grudgingly admitted that the Bible was better than his book, The Art of the Deal. Did you hear that speech?
Really? Yeah.
It was great. It was like, let me tell you, The Art of the Deal, that my book, and he just rambles about his book for a while. He's like, but there's a book I like better than it. And he goes, The Bible. It's the only book better than really The Art of the Deal.
He doesn't really believe that.
He doesn't, but it was just great.
He just had this quick memory. He just had a quick memory of like John Lennon saying the Beatles were bigger than Jesus and then boycotting them.
Yep.
You know, the Beatles were bigger than Jesus, practically. And
well, yeah, in mass, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. It was fun. There were four of them.
I mean, there's four of them.
Yeah. and you know, John Lennon said that like... It had in some interview, and it had like zero effect until like a year later, somebody picked it up and repeated it, and like when they were coming to town, and they're coming to America, and they wanted to, you know, people always want to stop people from doing stuff. What is up with that? Why do people always want to stop people from doing stuff?
Stop who from doing what now?
The Beatles from playing in the South.
I don't know. Mm.
You know, I have a folder. I have a folder on my computer of show prep that I've never gotten around to. It's got 327 emails in it. Maybe we should just pick one.
What is the Trump
thing? Maybe they were upset about British.
British, you got what? Saving Christmas. You got him wanting to save Christmas. Now I guess he wants to say the Bible's better than his book. Yeah, you don't really believe
that. D4. Here's one. Here's just a random out of this folder. D4 was a methamphetamine-based experimental drug cocktail developed by the Nazis in 1944. Nazi doctors found that equipment-laden test subjects who had taken the drug could march 88.5 kilometers or 55 miles without resting before they collapsed. Each tablet contained 5 milligrams of oxycodone, 5 milligrams of cocaine and 3 milligrams of methamphetamine, then called Pervitin. Pervitin. Does make you kind of pervy. The researcher who uncovered the project, Wolf Kemper, said the aim was to use D4 to redefine the limits of human endurance. Test subjects could march in a circle for 90 kilometers per day without rest while carrying a 20-kilogram backpack. Nazi doctors.
They marched in a circle. In what sense did they go 90 kilometers?
Well, in a circle. Well, if, you know, if they marched 90 kilometers, they'd be into France. Yeah.
Or, I mean, like, compared to what?
Resistance.
Well, what were they marching before they took Pervone or whatever it is?
Soldiers do not regularly march 55 miles without dying. Oh, let's look it up. How far do soldiers march? Tell me, Internet.
Someone told me that I should go back and watch all the Star Trek Next Generation, and I tried. I really gave it my all. Just not my thing. It's a good show, don't get me wrong. My doorman loves it. Not a fan. But anyways, they were talking about how in the history of the human race, there was a period where humans were using drug warfare, and the soldiers were like taking drugs in order to help themselves like fight and combat better. And I wonder if this is kind of like a take on what was going on with the Nazis, because I keep hearing stuff about the Nazis like, oh, they were on meth and now they're on this stuff. I think didn't they develop MDMA or something like that, or something like that.
Ooh, Nazis?
Yeah.
I don't know. People say that they invented meth, but I think it was simultaneously invented by the Japanese and the Americans. I think that they invented... they had something called dolphabine, named after Adolf Hitler, which I think was some synthetic narcotic, because narcotics are always the thing that was in short supply in the war, because everyone's wounded all the time. There's only a limited amount of poppies. So I think dolphabine was methadone. It was used for painkiller.
I don't know about the Next Generation, but that was a running plot in Star Trek Deep Space Nine. The Jem'Hadar were like an army that was hooked on this drug called White, and it was both a performance-enhancing drug as well as an addiction to keep them all loyal.
There you go. Yeah, no one's going to run off into the woods and make love with the rabbits when they need their drug.
Yeah.
Pacifists. Have you guys ever Googled cat rape on YouTube?
No, those particular I'm not words sure never come together.
Do it right now.
Oh, what are you having us do? Explain to us what we're going to find. All it is
cats having sex. Like, cats having normal cat sex looks really rapey. I mean, I think it is. You know, that's why, okay, I didn't get that upset when they shot Cecil the lion, because he was an alpha male lion. What do alpha male lions do? They just rape females all day long. That guy's a rapist, man. And a murderer.
Fun cat. Yeah, rape? I didn't understand the Cecil the lion thing. I didn't get what that was about.
You have cats, Jim. I mean, I'm not sending you like cat squish porn or anything. I'm sending you cat rape. It's a natural, beautiful thing, man. Cats raping cats. It happens all the time. But it's really painful. I mean, they're like, they bite in, the male bites into the neck of the female really hard. And then she don't like it, usually.
Unless she does.
It's been happening around my house all day with my two neutered female kittens.
Worms.
They were sweet for the first 7 days, and then they discovered cat rape.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you tired of governments murdering people around the world? Stop using their money. There is an alternative. Bitcoin is a stateless free market non-political currency. Bitcoin cannot be inflated or controlled by any government. By using their money, you are helping the state. Stop doing it. You have an incredible alternative available now. Learn it, use it, spread it. Get started with Bitcoin at bitcoin.com. That's bitcoin.com.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Can you Bane meowing?
Meow. Do what now?
Do Bane meowing, Jim.
Meow.
Just more. Bane being cat raped, meowing.
Meow. You'll just have to imagine the fire.
Hi, guys. What's up? Let's get back on track here. It's a wonderful show.
We were talking about drugs, weren't we?
Have you seen the documentary called No No, a documentary, Jim?
Yeah, I think I...
Baseball player.
Yeah, I recommended that to you.
Yeah, but, you know, we do have an audience on the radio listening who probably weren't there when you said it to me, so...
I'm sure they were.
About
they
just don't
have a co-host.
Yeah.
Talk
about No No.
What's No No?
So, I don't remember the guy's name. You do, I'm sure. There was a baseball player who went by the name No No, who was most famous for having a no-hitter game, and it turned out that he was high on LSD the entire time during the game, and people who believe, you know, it's believable because, like, he's in the or he was before he died in the position that, you know, drugs are bad, and used to do talks about it, but he used to talk about it how it was a bad thing, and he pitched a no. Yeah, Doc Ellis. There we go. And he was, he pitched a no-hitter, and he was
a no-hitter to our sports retarded audience members.
You mean like me? I didn't know it really.
Until I watched the documentary. Doesn't mean that nobody hit anything. Doesn't it just mean nobody hit anything?
Right. He pitched a game
rare and amazing, but it really sounds like bad baseball to me. It sounds like, why would I pay to eat popcorn and watch that?
Because,
well, that's how I feel about most baseball.
I've only ever been to two. No, I've been to one professional sports ball ever. It was at San Francisco. It was the 49ers. It was baseball. It was the 49ers getting their butt kicked on their home turf for the second day in a row. It was that, like, Houston just killed them two or three days in a row one time at Candlestick Park, and which I think is now called, like, Orbits.com Park or something. I don't know. They changed it, but. Recently sober too, and I was bored. I left like three quarters of the way through the game. It was so boring, and then I soon after that saw a Simpsons where Homer gets sober for 30 days, and at one point he's at a baseball game and everyone's drinking around him, and he's just sitting there like focused and looking nervous, and he goes, "I never realized how boring this game is."
Yeah, I've never been a fan of watching baseball, especially on TV. Like, going to a game is fun because you get to drink and have hot dogs and peanuts and all that stuff. But watching it on TV is absolutely just mind. It's almost as bad as watching golf on TV. I think golf is the worst.
There's a good golf parody on TV right now. It's like they're playing golf and they're talking about the announcers are whispering because it's golf, and like this giant sea monster kraken comes out of the have you seen this? Comes out of the water fowl and just like grabs the players and starts eating them. He's like, some sort of sea monster has come out. I believe, Bill, that that's called a kraken. And they're still whispering, and he's like, and it's just like, yeah, you whisper when you announce golf.
Were they golf clapping after he successfully ate all the professional golf players? Like, oh, yeah.
Yes, very good. Yeah. I believe that's called a kraken.
Yeah, I would clap too if someone eaten something.
You know, people have talked a lot about what the Grateful Dead fanaticism has in common with baseball. I've actually seen several articles on that by... For some reason, I can add to that.
Can you give me one thing?
I would add to it was, it's not as fun sober. Because I saw the Dead 9 times, and I was tripping 8 times, and I was sober 1 time. And that one time was, well, to be fair, people, like long-term Deadheads, said the one show I saw sober was not a great Dead show. But, yeah, they were boring, man.
Maybe it's because they were sober.
Maybe they were so. I doubt it. There was actually an AA meeting that only met at Grateful Dead shows. It was called Wharf Rats, and it met like
cool.
But behind the tapers, you know, they had Grateful Dead allowed people to tape their shows. Do you guys know about this?
Nope.
It was pretty cool. It was very cool because it was, you know, starting in the '70s, and it was like back then, taping shows was bad, you know, like they would prosecute people for doing it. They would beat people up for doing it. There's actually an episode of what's the show that had it was the show with the rerun was one of the characters' names. It was a all black family. You know that one?
Rerun was a name? I got no sense of that as a name.
Yeah, you guys are too young. There's an episode of that where Rerun gets paid to go tape a Steely Dan concert and bootleg it. And it's like the big moral quandary. And he learns a lesson that he shouldn't have done it. But the Dead were letting people tape in. It's pretty cool.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof. My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF. Because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
So we can talk about Cantwell's reaction into Neo. What did he say?
His reaction into, into Neo-descent.
Neo-reactionary. As opposed to a paleo reactionary.
We didn't finish talking about Rerun and what's happening.
Oh yeah.
So now you guys know what I'm talking about because you saw it on Nick at Night. Now I'm like, don't you remember that show from when we were kids? And you're like, no, I remember when I was a kid and I was watching it 20 years after it was over.
On Nick at Night, and it was old.
Yeah.
That's where they put old shows on.
It is. Well, it's funny too because I was trying to describe it. It's like I couldn't describe it without worrying about sounding racist, and like not in a new like, oh my god, everything is on PC now and it's hard not to sound racist, but no, it's more like it's hard to describe something from the 70s without sounding racist somehow.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff is like blaxploitation type stuff.
It is, man. The show where the hero is like a really fat black kid who's really stupid but he can dance really well. Yeah.
That's triggering.
You know, I was channel flipping today. I was like, how did they ever greenlight a sitcom in the 60s and 70s that takes place in a Nazi war criminal camp? Like what network executive
is that
say,
where this show was set?
No, I'm talking about Hogan's Heroes, man. I'm like,
I didn't watch that either.
What network exec didn't?
I don't
wouldn't
know what
say
that is.
Too soon, man. I mean, this is like 20 years after the end of the World War II. And like, I know, let's have a zany madcap sitcom with a bunch of Americans in a Nazi war camp. Like, gee, that's hilarious, man.
What could go wrong? Like,
what could go wrong? And then, like, you know, and then the funny, lovable Nazi named Colonel Clank. What could go wrong?
Yeah, it worked on The Great Escape. Oh, wait, that wasn't a comedy.
Yeah, it wasn't. Just what gotta to get that motorcycle movie? Into Switzerland. Almost.
Yep, yeah. Yeah, too bad.
Is this Steve McQueen?
Yeah. Yeah. And he was a Steve.
He was. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Steve McQueen was Steve? A Steve?
Is yeah. Oh, you've actually... Name. You're one of the five people who actually saw that movie.
I love that movie.
Yeah, it's that movie only, was.
It's really what made me like that actor. What's his name?
No. We like him so much, we don't know him by
there
name.
There you go. I love that actor. What's his name? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we like that movie. It's about a fat guy that gets laid all the time.
Yeah. And basically, a lot of that stuff, he was just kind of like
parodying. I'm plump and luscious.
He was like parroting a lot of Lycus stuff, but
really,
yeah, it was like basically a combination of Lycus and Tao Te Ching.
Tao Te Ching.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. Highly recommend it. Tao is Steve.
Donald Long.
Donald Logue. Yeah. I remember now.
Yeah.
So I made the mistake of watching Cantwell today. He had a podcast, and the
did you
very
see the
first
cat rape pictures of Cantwell that Cantwell Googling put up? That was my idea.
What?
What?
Okay, go to Cantwell. Go to Twitter/CantwellGoo, and you know it's one of those parody accounts. It's the one that likes me. So he made, at my suggestion, made, took pictures of a cat raping another cat and put Cantwell as the bottom and made the top that that tranny that's like threatening, calling the police on Cantwell all the time now. Do you know about this?
Yeah,
I don't know about this.
That was entertaining.
Cantwell wrote some article that I almost agreed with most of it. It was basically like, being gay makes total sense. Be gay if you want, but don't chop your parts off. It's unnatural. It doesn't make you a woman. And I'm like, I agree so far with everything there. And he basically was talking about some couple that's raising their 3-year-old as a tranny. You know, because like the kid was having a bad day and said, being a boy makes me sad. So they decided to raise him as a girl, like that moment. And Cantwell said that was child abuse.
That's fine, as long as he can switch back whenever he wants.
Yeah, but I don't know. That's where I didn't necessarily completely keep agreeing with it, but it is a lot of nuance. But, you know, it was a Link Baby article. So some 50-year-old man living as a woman in North Carolina, like, wrote Cantwell, demanded he take the whole thing down, and said, I'm calling the police on you for hate crimes if you don't take this down. And of course, Cantwell immediately took it down. No, he was like, no, go jump in the lake, lady and or man. And the lady, like, there's a video of Cantwell calling the police in North Carolina because they left a message on his house saying, this person called and said you're leaving her threats on the internet. Like, I was siding with Cantwell in this whole thing. The lady was being so ridiculous. The man, this, let's say lady, benefit of doubt. But I just, when I got into this whole cat rape thing, I just thought it'd be really funny to see a picture of Cantwell as the bottom in a cat rape with that person as the top. So that exists. I'll find it. Send it to you guys. I'll use it for the show. Although it'd be kind of weird, because aren't we going to have Molyneux as the title of the show or something?
I don't know.
I don't even know anymore.
Yeah. Well, anyways, what I was saying originally before I so rudely interrupted, this, I was unfortunately watching Cantwell today, and he started off his program with showing off one of those parody videos at the WriteStuff.biz.
Explain who WriteStuff.biz is for people that don't know.
They're an alternative right blog, and they're basically, for most of them, are kind of the fascist persuasion, the National Socialist persuasion. Nazis. And they make some really funny parodies. Yeah, they make some funny stuff, but it's really kind of kills you inside when you laugh at it. But for the most part, absolutely terrible. And he started playing one of their parody songs and started talking about, oh, you should go check out this website. It's great stuff, great people over there. And I'm like, and then his previous show, he was talking about, like, you know, how dare people say that I'm turning over into a neo-reactionary. And then, like, the next episode, he's promoting the rightstuff.biz. Yeah. Okay.
What is a neo-reactionary? How can a person be reacting to something and have it not be new? Like, I don't get it.
But yeah, like, neo-reactionary is kind of like a movement of like alt-right ideologies.
I took a neo-reactionary movement about an hour ago when I had my coffee.
Oh, that's not good for radio.
I mean, are like mainline reactionaries out there still reacting to things from the 80s? Is that what's going on? Like,
what's happening? I can't believe they let that show still on at Nick at Night. That's racist.
No, that they like it, probably. It's
like,
racist.
They like us.
Yeah.
Check your email, guys. I sent you some visual humor on the radio.
Oh, fun.
I sent you the cat rape Cantwell picture.
Do I want to click this? I don't know.
It's not bad. It doesn't make you like harm cats. It doesn't harm cats. No cats are harmed in making this.
But Cantwell was, and that's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, this is beautiful and natural. Stop squirming.
that was the caption before he put Cantwell in it. It was like an adult cat trying to, I don't think it was cat rape, I think it was trying to like groom, like lick a little cat. But it just looked kind of Nambla-y once it's got Cantwell in it.
man.
And then the other one is me burying. Like, the other one of like me from the bottom of a grave where I have a shovel in my hand. The I will bury you. That's Camel Googlin made that too. It puts the donation on its skin.
Hashtag please donate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there's one. Actually, they're furries.
Yeah.
That's disturbing.
Well, that's one of the running jokes of this Cantwell parody account, Cantwell Goo, Cantwell Googling, is he suddenly started to imply, you know, he is saying he's Cantwell, and he's suddenly starting to imply that Cantwell's a furry, someone who enjoys putting on animal costumes and having sex play with other people in animal costumes in hotel rooms, if you don't know what that is. Did you just go, ugh.
Yeah, they can yiff in hell.
Wow.
Man, people got their kinks. They get the people get to dress up in costumes they want. I know.
Dobby's Venn diagram of friends probably includes some of those people, huh?
Well, you know, I don't monitor them in their intimate moments, but yes, I do know people with costumes like that for sure.
Yeah. You don't monitor them in your in their intimate moments. What kind of friend are you? Too soon. Well, I mean,
those, I know there's a convention in my area because
I think you go to conventions that have sub conventions in different rooms that have furry sex.
They do. I'm almost certain of it. I used to go to a thing called BayCon, which is just a general role playing convention, but it had a huge furry contingent. Yeah. So that's something that happens.
I want to know what happens in that room at the Walking Dead conference.
Oh man. Yeah,
is there Walking Dead role playing sex stuff?
The furries need a zombie contingent pronto. Like that should already be a thing.
There's probably three people listening going, these guys don't know. Like they're doing it while they're listening to us. They're like, these guys are so square. They think they're onto something. They think they're inventing something.
Those who allow the furries to exist share the crime of its existence, right?
Wow.
Jim's so intolerant, man.
I'm very intolerant.
I just think it looks sweaty. I mean,
Into the trash it goes.
I think animals are cute and it's fun to imitate them, but those costumes look really uncomfortable.
Well, I just made the mistake of going to the Encyclopedia Dramatica article on furries. I highly recommend.
Well, Jim will be happy since he's from Las Vegas. Jim and hates furries. He'll be happy that you probably don't know that there's an episode of CSI, the original one in Vegas, where someone in a furry costume gets shot and killed by a hunter, by a nearsighted hunter at night in the backwoods of Nevada.
That one down. Like too soon? I think it's too soon. No.
So was it all costumes that you got a problem with, or is it
Jim's
just
scared
animal
of costumes?
No, just two types.
Jim, show me on the doll what your babysitter did when you were four.
It's not the doll, it's the stuffed animal.
Cat toy.
Yeah, it's only bronies and furries. And so, I usually think that furries were the worst thing, and then I found out about bronies.
Bronies is not a sexual thing, it's just guys that like ponies. Oh,
you do not know what you're talking about, sir. I suggest
stop. I'm sure there are people who like think there's something sexual about ponies, but you can't slander all bronies because
I can. Indeed, I can. I suggest you Google clopping.
Yeah, but that's a different thing than bronies. There are people who are just bronies, and it's not anything to do with sex or whatever.
What's the rule number if it exists?
Rule 34.
Yeah.
If it exists, there's porn of it.
Yeah.
It means there's clopping.
Clopping. Oh my god, my eyes. They're never being seen.
Listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
So guys, I just sent Jim pictures of Grateful Dead tapers back in the day of seas of mountains of microphones at concerts on sticks way up above the crowd. And Jim's like, why? I said, great audio. And what'd you say?
Yeah, but it's too bad it's great audio of something terrible.
You're insane. The Dead were wonderful.
I would wholeheartedly disagree with that.
I don't want to hate you, so answer this in the form of Bane. Bane, give Bane's opinion on the Grateful Dead.
The Grateful Dead is a stoner group. Jam bands are terrible unless you have copious amounts of marijuana in your system.
Yeah, but everyone did, including the band. You know, I like what they said about the Grateful Dead. They said it was the only band where the roadies had roadies. Like, they'd been such a force of nature for so many decades that, you know, by the third decade, like, literally, the roadies just, they were making so much money, they took their money and hired roadies and just supervised them.
So I take it there's, like, high-quality FLAC recordings of the Grateful Dead's every single show, right?
Yeah, there are.
That I could probably download this on torrents somewhere. Well,
probably, like, you know, 3,452 out of 304,056 shows or something. There might be a couple missing, but early ones. But, yeah, and they are all, like, you know, 320K FLAC lossless, you know, and... It was actually one of the first audio that was shared on the internet because, you know, the Dead and technology.
Because everyone had it?
It was actually one of the driving forces of the internet besides porn. You know how porn drives all new technologies and decides which format wins the format wars? There was a thing called the Well, which was Worldwide Electronic Link, which was an internet service provider from the 80s that's still around that was... put together by the guy who did the whole Earth catalog. And, you know, this is like the web before the web. It was like news groups and email before the web and FTP. And they were FTPing over dial-up. They were FTP Grateful Dead audio. Like, all right, I'll send you this short song. Let me know in 6 days what you think of it, you know.
I don't get the whole taping thing. Well, I mean, I can get the whole taping thing, but just not of the
I
Dead.
I just
not of the Dead.
Yeah, I just liked it. They were allowing it when, you know, everyone else was trying to stop it. It was kind of like, it was kind of being prescient about the, like, what the internet has become. Like, the internet, there's bands that allow taping now because they can't stop it. And they know that, you know, they'll make more money playing, selling tickets to the tapers if they allow taping. But it seems like a lot of bands and especially managers and record labels just never really grokked the true economy of performance like that.
Yeah, I used to go to shows all the time and people would record them even though they weren't supposed to, but that never stopped me from going to a show and actually paying for a ticket to go see them. Then I could just download the music afterwards and then listen to the concert. So it's like basically kind of like memorizing. Yeah.
Don't the Flaming Lips allow taping? I think they do.
I'm not sure. I mean, there's lots of tapes of them. I love the Lips, by the way.
I know. Do you see people taping them at shows?
I have never been to a I haven't been to a Grateful Dead either, for reasons, but not for the Lips either. And I really want to go see them, especially since like they put on these extravagant shows with confetti and you know, costumes and the giant inflatable hamster ball that goes into the audience.
I toured opening them for a month, and I'm like, ugh, I don't ever want to see them again, even though they're great.
Really? Were they still doing that stuff? In their alternative days?
They were they still doing it? You mean, they were already doing it. Not to the extent that they did later, but yeah, they did stuff like tried to make every show special, and they would get there early and spend two extra hours putting up, you know, 10,000 Christmas lights in a place that held 300 people. Yeah. They also were the loudest band I've ever heard, other than like, you know, The Who or something. I mean, they were unbelievably loud, you know, and it was weird because we were playing like, so, like we'd play in Philly and they'd play like 1,000 people, and then we'd play like, you know, Clackamas, Oregon and played like 90 people. And they would use the same volume in a club of 90 people as they would in a club of 1,000 people. And they had a sound man who tried to blow all their speakers, all the house speakers. Like, that was his macho thing. Like, well, if they're not good enough, they'll need to replace them. So if I blow them, they'll get better equipment. That's just not how it works. They just will have crappy equipment for the next month of bands.
Yeah.
Yeah. They fired that guy.
But notice there's no Molyneux or Cantwell tapers.
Oh, man.
That's the
redemption. I guess I want to close with bronies are people, too.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they are.
Animals can't talk.
They are.
Jim's outvoted.
That's why I don't like democracy.
Worms.
Worms.
Let's see. Jim likes National Socialism. Doesn't like...
Ow!